Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli. Welcome back, Tom.
Alan, always great to be back with you.
Well, I guess there's no sense in beating about the bush because all of us who have anything in the stock market at all, and that's a lot of Americans, want to know what one of the biggest and most responsible traders of all, that's T-R-A-D-E-R-S, was thinking as this market did something nasty in its bed.
Yeah. Well, that's probably a very appropriate way to describe the situation. I mean, you know, a couple of thoughts. And first of all, as we've talked about on the show, we value our fund on March 31st of every year. So this happening in August certainly was preferable to this happening in the middle of March,
yeah.
You know, which is what happened when the global financial crisis hit and the markets tanked in 08 and 09. The low point of the market was in March of 09. And of course, we value the fund 2 weeks later. That's one of the reasons why we had the big losses. So, you know, because many people ask me, what did I think? And I said, well, you know, keep in mind, we have tremendous confidence in our long-term asset allocation. We're patient investors as a pension fund, and we don't value the fund every day. So whatever happened, or every month, so whatever happened didn't have an immediate impact. But look, I'd be less than candid if I didn't say, you know, my stomach was in my throat for, you know, for some of those hours when you saw, you know, this lack of confidence translating into that market collapse. Now, things have stabilized somewhat, but there's still a lot of up and down. And I think, you know, the bottom line from my perspective in terms of our investment role is that the kind of returns we've seen over the past few years probably going to be harder to come by as we move forward. And that's one reason why we have been looking very seriously at lowering our long-term assumed rate of return as to what we're going to earn with the pension fund.
So let me just see if I can recapitulate that.
Yep.
For those of us who don't have your brains, and I said those of us who don't have your brains, you know, in 08, you were just having to issue your report at a time when it couldn't have been worse, and
yep.
You had to take it on the chin. Now,
yep.
You did the report in March, and you watched with your heart in your throat as the market began to tank, and then a few days later, all got much better. One of the questions I've always had of fiscal wizards is this. How come when the market goes down and my Tiaa-Cref, for example, goes down, when it comes up again to almost where it was, how come I don't have what I had when it went down in the first place?
Well, I mean, I don't profess to be a wizard at it, but, you know, look, the challenge I think we have right now is that we've been in the middle of this very extended period of a bull market, a very positive market, and it's gone on. It has not the longest in history, but one of the longer ones. We were due for a correction. I don't think anybody doubted that. When it happened, seemingly happened as rapidly as it did. And of course, now that it's bounced back, you know, some of the numbers would indicate it really wasn't a correction. It didn't lose enough to be considered a correction, which may mean that in the short run, there'll be more of this up and down because the markets are still trying to sort through what's happening in China, what's happening in Greece, what is the Fed going to do? You know, there's all this talk now when the markets got really bad and you heard from the head of the New York Fed, well, maybe we don't have to raise the interest rates quite as soon. Now, of course, things have stabilized. You hear more recently, well, you know, maybe we should stay on track to raising the rate, which is everybody anticipated would happen sometime in the fall or by the end of the year. So I think until there's more clarity on those issues, Alan, you're not going to see a clear picture as far as what the markets are going to do. I think in the long run, the strength, and for us with our pension fund and perhaps with your investments as well, when we talk about the stock market, while we are diversified and we're invested in European and Asian stocks as well, you know, the primary part of our portfolio is in U.S. stocks. Mm-hmm. And we've certainly seen better economic numbers, you know, in terms of economic output and better than expected numbers when they finalize the numbers for the first half of the year as far as gross domestic product and you know, the resilience of the American economy. This is still the strongest economy in the world. So as long as those externalities don't pull us down, I think expecting modest growth in your portfolio and our portfolio is probably, you know, a reasonable expectation. But you're right, when it goes down, it takes a while to make it back up, and it'll eventually get back there over the long haul. But when the dips happen, it takes a while to get back to where you were before, and that's something we're all going through right now.
Okay, let's talk about Iran. Obviously, Iran is going to have restored relations with many nations, maybe not with ours yet, because there are still congressional prescriptions about what can be done with our sanctions. But assuming that Iran's, you know, money loosens up and people start trading in Iran, what are the implications for us?
Well, you know, in the short run, because I've been asked this question with our pension fund, you know, we've had a divestment strategy with regard to energy companies that are doing business in Iran. And some have asked, well, now that there seems to be some change, you know, are we going to lift those limitations in the divestment that we've done? And frankly, my answer is no. We continue to be divested from those companies that we announced a number of years ago, and a number of companies who we've put on a freeze list because we've been continuing to pressure them, to pressure the Iranian regime. You know, I think the concerns about Iran are still valid in terms of the rhetoric that we've seen in the past. Certainly, the comments about wiping Israel off the face of the map and incitement to genocide. Ahmadinejad is not there anymore, but that, you know, that mentality I don't think has changed too much in terms of the Iranian perspective. And I think a valid concern is with all the additional money that they could be getting, to the extent that they have been behind some of these terrible terrorist forces in the Middle East, you know, that continues to be a concern. So what will happen when and if Iranian oil gets back in the marketplace? You've already seen oil prices going down because of oversupply. Now, that's good at the pump, but it's also created some of the havoc in the markets. If you now see all this Iranian oil coming in, what is that going to mean? It's not clear. You know, that could create some issues and some problems there. You know, I certainly wouldn't see from an investment perspective in the short run any change. I still think that area, that regime, that geopolitical dynamic there, there's a lot of instability. And I would, you know, I would suggest, since we don't get too much of a clear picture about what's happening in Iran, even in Iran, they've had a population that's really been under, you know, siege for a long time. I think there's a lot of pent-up frustration and anger internally with the regime. I'm not sure that would be a smart place for companies to do business, no matter what happens, you know, with some of the other changes that may be underway. I'm very skeptical. Let me just put it that way.
Will you remind everybody about exactly how much money the comptroller has to invest in everything altogether?
Well, you know, the total value of the fund at the end of our fiscal year was $184.5 billion. You know, that's our audited number. We're a little less than that right now because of, you know, the ups and downs in the markets. But, you know, give or take in the $180 billion range, I mean, we're the third largest public pension fund in the United States of America. We're one of the largest in the world. That does make us one of the bigger investors. You know, keep in mind, a lot of our investments are done, you know, through index funds, you know, through the stock market. That's a big chunk of what we do. So I try to have people not think that I'm sitting there every morning, you know, telling my investment people, you know, buy this, sell that. You know, we tend to take, again, the long patient view that a pension fund could take. So we have a lot in index funds that we think over time passive investing is positive. We do some active investing, and then, you know, we do some of the alternatives to really make up for the volatility in the market. So real estate, we have a little bit in hedge funds, not a lot, but private equity, real assets. And then obviously, Alan, because we're a pension fund, we do have a significant part of our portfolio in fixed income, U.S. Treasuries, other kinds of fixed income, which has been a very difficult area to make money in recent years because of the low interest rate and the free money. So that's why we do have to be very smart and as much as we can be, you know, strategic even beyond our passive index funds with our public equity and with our alternative investments. But it's, you know, unfortunately, we have a terrific investment team. I have a great chief investment officer in Vicki Fuller, and, you know, that's why our performance has been as strong as it's been. And, you know, we're working hard to lower that contribution rate that we charge to the local governments particularly. That has an impact on local budgets and local taxpayers. And in spite of the volatility, because we've had a number of good years, we're hoping to cut that contribution rate once again this year.
We're talking to Tom DiNapoli, New York State Comptroller, and if I may be so bold, my friend. So let me ask you this. You just mentioned that California was ahead of us in terms of their assets that they put into the market. Now, you have 180-something billion. They have more than that. If the two of you get together, is that against the law or anything for you to say, okay, we want to socially invest and make sure that anybody who's doing something we consider bad, they have to listen to us?
Well, you know, it's an interesting question. We obviously have, particularly with California, and I would say with our New York City pension funds and the teachers fund as well, we have a tremendous amount of communication. We sit together on certain organizations that bring investors together. The Council on Institutional Investors is one that brings together public pension funds and endowment fund members. I'm involved with the Board of Ceres, which is a very effective environmental advocacy group, and members of the California plans are on that as well. So we work in a common way on many issues, you know, whether it's climate risk or engaging companies on good corporate behavior. We certainly talk about our investment strategy, but I think it would be fair to say that we have our own asset allocation and we have our own relationships with asset managers. So it's not so much that we're in competition, but I think that, you know, we have our own programs, we have our own philosophy. So while we share thoughts, we don't really invest together. I think that would be just not something that has ever really happened. But I'm sure some of our strategies would be considered to be similar. But we have our own program. We have our own, you know, proprietary information from our advisors and consultants. They have theirs. So we actually intersect more and work together more on that corporate engagement level on the big issues of the day, because that's where we put together our power as shareholders, you know, to try to make corporations do better to protect our investment. And that's where we get into the what's called ESG, environment, social, and governance issues. And that's where we probably have the most coordination with our sister funds.
Tom DiNapoli, you have been very interested in foreclosure in New York State. And in fact, you just issued a report on how come foreclosures are still running ahead of where we thought they should be. What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, it seemed for a while things seemed to have been slowing down in terms of foreclosure activity. And you know, I think part of that may have been there was so much in the, you know, in the pipeline that there were a number of issues that still had to be worked out. The report that we just put out earlier in the summer really shows that the problem continues and that, in fact, we're seeing foreclosure filings increasing in many parts of the state. It's interesting. New York City seems to be doing a little better in this area. And when you get to Mid-Hudson Valley and Nassau and Suffolk County on Long Island, it's where you've seen the numbers starting to go up again. So I think the message is a clear one. We all have to work together to, you know, to turn the situation around. If you are a family that's facing foreclosure, you certainly have a big issue and a big concern there. If you're in a neighborhood that has a home that's foreclosed on, you know, these zombie properties where no one's taking care of them, it decreases the value of the property in the neighborhood. It has a big impact on everyone's neighbors. So, you know, the fact that, you know, from 2013 to 2014, we're seeing the cases increase by 27%. That's a warning that we've all got to work together. You know, the Attorney General, Eric Schneiderman, has been trying to address this issue. And, you know, state government has certainly been trying to make sure the banks do a better job of helping people work through their obligations so they continue to stay in their homes. But we've got some big issues in certain parts of our state that we still have to deal with. New York was not hit by the foreclosure crisis as hard as other states, but we still have had our own problems. As I said, if you're in a neighborhood or if you're in a family that's facing it, that's a crisis for you, and we shouldn't think that that's behind us. It's not.
Tom DiNapoli, the good news is that the jobs top 9 million, which is a new New York State high, and yet I still see some people trying to secede, some upstate communities, Genesis Steve. Now, that's never going to happen, obviously. I'm working on a piece on that now. But this secession thing is always amusing when Long Island says, let's secede, or Manhattan says, let's secede, or upstate says, let's secede. But clearly, upstate still hurts more than Manhattan.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You remember, was it Norman Mailer had the 51st state? And my Long Island friends every now and then want to do it. Look, you know, you're right. Historic high, 9 million on payroll. Growth, particularly in the private sector, very significant, but not 100% perfect picture. Public sector employment still going down. You know, that's one piece that still has a drag on the unemployment rate, going down as fast as we'd like. And three out of the four jobs that have been created over the past 5 or 6 years have been created where? In the five boroughs of New York City. Sure. New York City is where we've really seen the big job growth. Long Island is on the plus side, but behind New York City, but on the plus side. Hudson Valley is up. Finger Lakes, Capital Region, even Western New York, been a lot of attention. You know, the Buffalo Billion and work in Erie County and Niagara. They're up. But the reason that I think you still have the concerns you identify, Central New York, North Country, Mohawk Valley, and Southern Tier, where you're seeing, you know, a lot of the secession discussion, they're in the negative. So, you know, it is in many ways still the tale of two economies, and particularly when you look at that kind of central swath of the state, you know, from the Pennsylvania border on up, you know, through the North Country, you're still talking about a negative picture as far as jobs. And that's one reason why in many of those communities population is going down. And often what happens is the population left behind is older, often in need of more services, poorer, and that creates other kinds of pressures on local government. So some of that frustration is certainly reflective of the fact that not every region of the state has benefited from this stronger economy. What is the challenge for us in New York? Keep the recovery going, keep the jobs growing, but have that prosperity be more evenly distributed, because unless every region of the state is benefiting, you know, we can't say we're out of the woods in terms of the tough economy.
Now, Tom DiNapoli, I only have 7 minutes left, so you have to keep your answers short, because I want to get...
I'll do the best I can.
No, I know you will, because that's who you are. You're a good guy. Have you decided whether your earlier predilections on who to back in this presidential election are changing?
No, I supported Hillary Clinton early, supported her before she announced,
early and
continued
often.
To support her. I'm very enthusiastic for her. And, you know, I hope that she can get out there, because when people hear her and see her, they will be as inspired by her as I have always been. It's a little frustrating, you know, that, you know, the kind of scrutiny and the diversion that you have now on the Republican side is taking away attention from Hillary Clinton. But I'm confident she is going to be our nominee, and we need to rally behind her.
Okay. And then when you run for governor, will she support you? That's a trick question.
I am supporting her without any condition or qualification.
Right. And will you be running for governor?
I am happily looking forward to running for re-election to state controller, Alan.
And in a very short answer, you have been writing and proselytizing and pushing, you know, paid-for campaigns, public campaigns. How's that going?
I don't think it's going as well as it should be. You know, we've talked before about, you know, the influence of private donations. We don't have to rehash that. I think the part of the argument that we need to have the public focus on a little more, because people say, well, all these folks are getting in trouble and getting indicted and going to jail. We need more good, qualified, everyday people to want to run for office. And the biggest impediment that I often hear from people when they say, I'd like to, but I can't, I don't have the money, I can't self-fund. Public financing, I believe, would add a level of competitiveness that is lacking in so many of our races. And I say that as an incumbent who won, you know, by a lot of votes last year. We need more opportunity for people to step up and not have money be an impediment. I'm not saying it's a perfect system, but I think it's worked well in New York City. It's worked well in other jurisdictions that have it. I know we still have that issue with the legislative races, with the way the districts have been drawn. Is also anti-competitive, but if we have public financing, that's how we're going to get more good people. That's how we're going to have fewer people that get in there and do the wrong thing. But, you know, unfortunately, with all the other pressures, and especially with the tough issue of the economy, people don't seem to focus on this change. But I really think if you want reform for a very small cost, you'll get better government. You'll certainly have people who are in office spending less time raising money, so productivity is going to go right up there. I think it's a very fundamental change, and one that's long overdue. I'm going to keep pressing for it. I hope others will press for it as well.
On the ethics front, Preet Bharara, we only have 4 minutes, Tom, but Preet Bharara said, stay tuned. And yeah. A lot of people's knees got wobbly. You hearing anything?
No, I mean, look, there have been too many cases of high just over the summer, right? You know, yeah. A couple of folks convicted and giving up their seats and more trials coming up in the fall. You know, people want to know that someone's looking. It's the work we're doing on public integrity with Attorney General Schneiderman and on some of the cases, especially with local corruption. But, you know, I think Preet's doing the job that he's got to do. The other federal prosecutors are doing it as well. People should not think they're going to get away with something because everybody's out there looking these days. So if you're doing something wrong, you're going to get caught eventually. Better off that you avoid the prosecutors by doing things the right way.
I'm not a particular fan of gambling in New York, and yet we keep seeing every time you turn around, somebody's going to set up a casino, or we see huge gambling up in Saratoga. Gambling. I'm astounded it's going on here. And I'm wondering, isn't this contributing to bad behavior on part of some of our citizens?
Well, you know, the genie is somewhat out of the bottle. I do think the concern is with more and more opportunities as the casinos come online, I do think we run the risk of more individuals, and that means families, falling into the trap of being addicted to gambling and compulsive gambling. You know, this is something where if we're going to be making more money from this, we definitely should put much more money into programs that help people get out of that addiction, because that's going to be a real burden on families. So I think it is an issue. I think it is a concern. And, you know, the more gaming opportunities, the more people are going to fall into that trap and people who could least afford it. So let's put some more into the substance abuse. Have an addiction to gaming and casinos and gambling, that's a substance abuse as well. We need to do a better job of addressing it as we provide more opportunities for people to fall into it.
Tom DiNapoli, we only have 2 minutes, but, you know, there's this continuing saga of bad blood between the governor and the mayor of New York City. What do you make of that?
Well, you know, I hope the bad blood will run its course quickly, because we need the governor and the mayor to be working together on behalf of their mutual constituents. Bad blood between governors and mayors in New York City is not new. You know, you know that from whether it's Republicans or Democrats, whoever it is. And I think these are two smart fellows that know that in the long run they will both look good if they work together on behalf of the people and not get stuck in some of this other stuff.
In two words, do you blame either of them more than the other one?
No. I blame neither. They just need to straighten it out.
And Tom, are you having fun? That's an important thing. You got to work every day. Do you have a skip in your gait?
When I know I'm doing a Shark Tank interview, definitely. And yet I said it before, I got the best job in state government, being state controller. It's a privilege. It's an honor. Don't let anybody know that it's the best job, because I don't want anybody to come after it.
So when all of these good things happen in New York, do you get the credit you deserve? I mean, after all, jobs are up, the money's up, the markets are going up. You know, do you go home, turn on the television and thump your chest and say, that's all me?
Well, it's not. There's a lot of folks that contribute in government, outside of government. I think what people hopefully appreciate, and I think the votes last year when we led the ticket show it, we've been a steady hand in state government with all the ups and downs of the economy and budget problems and ethics problems and people getting in trouble. You know, we turned around this office on the ethics front, especially with managing the pension fund. We're doing the important business that this office does. A lot of it's back office, but it keeps the state moving in the right direction. So I'm very proud of that steady hand. How much credit we get, you know, as long as people still vote for me at election time, that's all that matters. So I'm very contented.
We always say that around here. Who gets the credit? Anyway, we're out of time. Our guest has been New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli. We love him. Comptroller, thanks so much for joining us.
Great, Alan. Love doing the show. Thank you.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.